Hello, I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. It's no secret that the Joe Biden administration has employed countless Obama-era officials, hence the joke in the U.S. that the Biden government is the third term of Barack Obama. Tonight, we'll profile one Biden admin official who critics say is responsible for the deaths of thousands of innocent lives, now leading America's top international aid agency. Find out just who we're talking about next. All right, let's get into the MO. She's been called the Butcher of Yemen by some during her stint as the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. when she blocked a vote to investigate human rights violations by the Saudis against the Arab world's poorest country. She's also known as one of the architects behind the destruction of Libya during President Obama's time as a key advisor on his National Security Council. Her memoir, The Education of an Idealist, was roundly lauded by political elites despite the book downplaying her role in both international human rights catastrophes. Her previous book from 2002, called A Problem from Hell, America and the Age of Genocide, won her a Pulitzer Prize and is often cited in academia as a case to be made for military intervention on the grounds of human rights. Today, Samantha Power heads USAID, handpicked by the Biden administration for her breadth of experience in foreign policy. USAID is, of course, America's foremost agency in the way of global soft power, distributing aid like food and medical supplies to needy countries all around the world. But USAID is also a well-known front for the CIA and its operatives to covertly function behind the cloak of humanitarian causes. All of this making this UK-born, Yale and Harvard-educated woman the perfect person to lead such an agency during such a volatile time in living history. Joining us now to discuss this controversial Biden admin official is Jim Jatras, who's no slouch on foreign policy himself. Jim is a retired U.S. diplomat and former GOP Senate foreign policy advisor, also one of my favorite brains to pick. Jim, thank you for being with us today. So tell me, Samantha Power, Butcher of Yemen, architect of Libya, too harsh?
No, I don't think it's harsh at all to call her the Butcher of Yemen, Libya, whichever country you want to pick. The only quarrel I would have if it would be if somebody tried to stick the word the in front of it, because certainly she was not the only one. I mean, you certainly have Susan Rice and other people that were involved in these things. I suppose this should give the lie to the notion some people have that if we put more women in charge of these decisions, we'd have a more peaceful world. If you look at, you know, these two people, Samantha Rice, Samantha Power, Susan Rice, Hillary Clinton, Anne Marie Slaughter, Michelle Flournoy, you can go down the list. I guess Kipling was right that the female of the species is more deadly than the male. I think my favorite title for her actually is the genocide chick. You know, she cut her bones on as reporting from Bosnia and manufacturing this notion of the United States has a duty to intervene in other countries to prevent war crimes and genocide. And of course, this has simply resulted in more death and destruction.
So under Trump, Samantha Power was obviously out of government work for a little while. So she went back to the halls of Harvard at the Kennedy School as a professor. But then Biden tapped her to come back to public service and head up USAID. Now, there's no bones about it. Where USAID goes, a color revolution tends to follow. Recently, Power made an unannounced trip to Hungary with the agency, where she apparently met with these young movers and shakers, people she called civil society, and said USAID was, quote, relaunching initiatives to boost independent media and drive up civic engagement. Now, you've been a diplomat in your career. Break down this diplomat speak for us. What was she doing in Budapest, and why didn't she tell the Orban administration ahead of time that she was going?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, this is about regime change. We just saw something similar, by the way. We see it actually unfolding in Georgia right now, where Georgia attempted to pass a law that would require what we do in here in the United States, that foreign funded entities need to disclose that and declare themselves to be foreign agent. I personally don't have a problem with that. And of course, in Hungary, we have a whole apparatus of not only US and European government organizations, but also the Soros organizations that are targeting Mr. Orban for regime change. You know, it really doesn't matter what the job is you have in Washington, whether it's a USAID administrator, whether you are the UN ambassador, as Samantha Power was during the Obama administration. There's only one rule in Washington. It's our way or the highway. If you don't fully toe the line on the diktat coming from Washington, and of course, in Orban's case, it's not only not being fully on board with sanctions and other measures against Russia because of the war in Ukraine, but also the whole panoply of, you know, rainbow and LGBT and social revolution issues being pressed by the Western powers to depopulate countries like Hungary. You know, I think this is one reason why these are the reasons why Orban is being set up this way by his ostensible allies. And certainly the Samantha Power's trip to Budapest was part of that.
Wait a minute, depopulation, but Hungary only has like 10 million people.
That's right. But, you know, the question is, which way is the arrow going? I mean, the policies of the Orban government in Hungary to say we need more Hungarians. So that what is it? Donald Trump said America first. Well, Orban's program is Hungary first and Hungarians first. Isn't that why there's a country called Hungary in the first place? Isn't it supposed to be a national home for Hungarians? You would think this would be an elementary observation about the desire of any people to be self-governing, have an independent state as a homeland for their people. And apparently that's out of bounds for Hungary. He's not allowed to do that. We need to find some way to cut down his population and to, you know, get with the program with the rest of Europe, which is to, you know, change the demographics and abolish national cultures and religious values and so forth.
All right. So Viktor Orban, the prime minister of Hungary, spoke at the 2022 CPAC event that was held in Texas last year. He was met with thunderous applause for some of the very conservative-leaning remarks that he made, you know, anti-abortion, building the border wall in his own country to stop illegal migration, things of that nature, definitely running afoul of what the Biden administration wanted to hear. But perhaps Orban's most offensive action was what he didn't say last year and still not saying this year, that Hungary will back Biden and NATO in supporting arms to Ukraine. Viktor Orban refuses to get on board the sanctions train against Russia, refuses to condemn Vladimir Putin. Hungary is among the few, if not the only EU country that won't play ball the way the US wants in Ukraine. What do you make of all of that? And do you think that has anything to do with Samantha Power's visit to Hungary?
You know, patriots of all countries unite. You have nothing to lose but your woke rulers. I think it's a positive sign that people at CPAC would welcome Orban's speech, that people recognize that leaders in other countries should feel about their own countries the way hopefully American patriots feel about our country. And that I guess is a controversial point of view nowadays. You're right as far the list of sins that Orban has for the crowd running Washington these days, that's not just on social policies domestically inside Hungary. It's above all for not towing the line on foreign policy, which right now is this completely destructive course that the West is following on Ukraine. Hungary as a country, and not a very big country, located in Central Europe and as a member of NATO and the European Union, is under tremendous pressure from both of those organizations to follow the script that's being written elsewhere that is contrary to his own country's interests. And the fact that, look, he does go along to the extent that he needs to with Western policy, Western sanctions, when it's a common decision by the European Union or by NATO, but he doesn't go beyond that. He doesn't go beyond the minimum necessary to make sure he doesn't break with those organizations in a way that's going to be detrimental to his own country's interests. And the fact that he puts Hungary and Hungarians first instead of the diktat from the Western powers, as I think is targeting him for removal. And of course, that's the agenda that Power was arriving in Budapest with.
All right, coming up next, a Hollywood dark comedy was made about alleged crimes against humanity, highlighting the narratives created by Washington to achieve political ends. But the real life events are supposedly what Samantha Powers says helped shape her worldview. We'll discuss it when we return with Jim Jatra. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
A danger to the world as it is, and because it has all this economic power that it uses for the military.
These are sick and twisted people that care about nothing but money and power. It's not even hate. I think they're indifferent. They just want money and power, and they're indifferent to who dies, as long as they can get that money and power.
Ensure that Joe Biden does not receive 4 more years.
Do you believe Trump?
As a general rule, no, never.
We must conduct a top-to-bottom overhaul to clean out the festering rot and corruption of Washington, D.C.
Oh, Biden is pushing us to World War III. I mean, you have to consider that is the worst. I mean, we should never be in this position. The U.S. has no business in Ukraine.
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. So Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz calls for all U.S. troops in Syria to come home as Democrats vote to keep them abroad. Now, if that confuses you just as much as it does me, then hold on to your hats. Former U.S. diplomat and GOP Senate foreign policy advisor Jim Jatras is back with us. Jim, Samantha Powers' background and her experience as a journalist during the war in what was then Yugoslavia is said to have shaped her worldview in that she believes the U.S. in particular should use military intervention in other countries to prevent genocide. That was the trope from her 2002 book, A Problem from Hell, America and the Age of Genocide, for which she won a Pulitzer Prize. This also landed her in newfound government jobs after her stint as a journalist. Now, you were already in the government space when the war broke out in Yugoslavia. They even made a movie based on the U.S. intervention in Yugoslavia, Wag the Dog. Where was the genocide that Power allegedly witnessed that shaped her worldview? I mean, I thought history has proven that Bill Clinton led NATO into a bombing campaign based on lies that killed way more people than the initial unrest within that country did.
Well, you know, the excuse for intervention in the Balkans, first in Bosnia and then in Kosovo, was that Serbia was committing genocide of Bosnian Serbs against Muslims in Bosnia and against Albanians in Kosovo. And of course, this was total lies. These should go right next to Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction or Assad's chemical weapons use. It's just, you know, total fabrications. Now, there were genocides during the Kosovo War, but they were the exact opposite of the ones we were told. When, for example, the Serbs were cleared out of Krajina in what is now Croatia by a combination of the Croatian army and professional military professionals trained by the United States, the kind of contractors we see, by the way, acting as proxies for NATO in Ukraine. You know, it's not as though the truth were not evident. You know, there was another great journalist at the time, a guy named Peter Brock, formerly with the New York Times, who tried to do honest reporting from Bosnia, and I think also in Kosovo as well. And that was just basically sidelined. It's the same kind of thing we've been seeing in every one of these episodes, that if you're coming out, if you're Christiane Amanpour and you're coming out with something that fits the narrative, not because your mind was influenced by these circumstances, but because you were there as a propagandist for the narrative to sell a war. And that's what these people do. And if you go there and say, hey, that's not true, this didn't really happen, here's what the real facts are, you're not going to be getting any Pulitzer Prizes. Nobody's going to make a movie about you. You're going to be sidelined, vilified, being accused of being a Putin apologist or Assad apologist or a Milosevic apologist, because that's not what the Borg wants. What the Borg wants is a narrative that serves as propaganda interests. You are a prostitute. You work for the narrative.
Dare I say it, manufacturing consent, Noam Chomsky and Edward S. Herman, seems to be, I guess, more of a prophecy than a book of research these days. So, Jim, recently, Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, I like to call him the new de facto leader of the squad, brought to the floor of the House a resolution to bring all U.S. troops home from Syria, where they have effectively just been guarding the oil and wheat fields. Some say the U.S. is stealing that stuff, but that's a different conversation for another day. But what got the U.S. troops there in the first place was advisement from Samantha Power to Barack Obama when she was on his National Security Council, that the U.S. needed to go to Syria. Was that sound advice? Should Obama have listened to Power?
No, it was terrible advice for Obama to listen to Samantha Power. In fact, for anybody to listen to Samantha Power. The idea that we were there in Syria, illegally, of course, under both American law and under the UN Charter, to protect the Syrian people from the Assad regime, when in fact we're talking about supporting a bunch of jihad terrorists against a secular Syrian government, is just a terrible advice. And by the way, let's not be naive. This was not unintended. We knew very well, we knew as far back as 2012, that supporting these terrorist groups in Syria was going to lead to an entity like ISIS. This is not an unintended consequence of a bad information or bad judgment. This is an intended outcome by people in Washington to create terrorist entities to use as weapons against regimes we're targeting for removal. So the idea that somehow for the umpteenth time, we sort of got it wrong, but you know, it was all done in good faith. It was not done in good faith. So unfortunately, nobody ever learns from these mistakes, and there are no consequences for the people who recommended. Now, it's nice to see that at least there was a vote under the War Powers Resolution on Syria. Of course, it failed very badly. And despite the fact that we finally seem to have some kind of glimmer of conscience from the people on the left, you know, the people, the squad and the left wing of the Democratic Party in Congress, and at least a respectable showing Republicans, it's not going to make any difference at the end of the day. It's not as though we really have a constitution or rule of law anymore. Let's remember, even in 1999, when the House voted on Clinton's authorization to use force in Kosovo, the authorization was voted down in the House of Representatives, and the Clinton administration proceeded with it anyway. The sad fact is, and I think a lot of Americans don't want to face this, we live in a post-constitutional age, a post-rule of law age here in the United States. It's nice to get the vote, but don't kid yourself, it won't make any difference.
Yeah, death by well-meaning people, as they say. So following her stint then on the National Security Council, Samantha Power, I'd like to say, failed up to then represent the U.S. at the United Nations. What do you make of her tenure as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations?
Well, in some ways, Samantha Power's tenure as U.N. ambassador was the high point, or the glow before the setting we started to see the setting of American power. You might say that Libya was the high point of American interventionism, in that even the Russians and the Chinese in the UN went along with the claimed purposes, humanitarian purposes, of application of Western power. And they saw that that was a facade too, that this was simply a lie to allow another regime change operation there. So, you know, I think in a way she was the mistress of all she saw. She was the master of the universe at that point, where she could say, this is American policy. Everybody supports it. The international community is on board, and this is what we're going to do. That was the last one that really went that simple, because the next target was Syria, and that one did not go as planned. And the Russians and the Chinese by then had wised up about what the program was. And we started to see that these regime change operations, these color revolutions that had gone so swimmingly up to Libya, it wasn't working anymore. And of course, we've just seen in the last year or so, a couple of years, an attempt in 2020 in Georgia, an attempt in Kazakhstan in 2022. It's not working anymore. So I hope that these people enjoyed their moment in the sun, where all the world seemed to be going in their favor. I don't think that's working anymore.
All right, so Ms. Power is a Democrat. We know that. She's politically aligned to the left. She espouses the ideologies rooted on that side of the political spectrum, you know, abortion, LGBTQ issues, trans rights, you know, all the usual cultural talking points that we hear so loudly here in the U.S. As you touched upon earlier, in her position at USAID, she brings with her all of these ideologies to countries who are in desperate need of food, you know, access to clean water, housing, education, all of these things that developing nations want. So I guess under her stewardship, will these countries have to sort of accept these Biden-era cultural issues in order to receive this aid, like a quid pro quo?
Oh, yes, there's definitely a quid pro quo to the kind of the social issues, the you know, the rainbow colored agenda of human rights and democracy, which is really anything but human rights and democracy. You know, a lot of people have the mistaken notion this is all driven by money. This is all the military industrial complex, as though it's an either or thing. And it's not an either or thing. That, you know, I wrote an article back in 1997, I think, called Rainbow Fascism at Home and Abroad, about how this ideology of human rights and democracy was being weaponized as a justification of aggression across the globe. And the sad fact is, Manila, these people are true believers. These people are ideologues, fanatics of the sort that you would expect from communists in Moscow in the 1920s. People really thought that they were the vanguard of all progressive humanity, and all humanity, all countries must go down the one and only true road of salvation, which is their social recommendations, which just happened to be tied up with a lot of money, moneyed interests in big corporations, a lot of arms sales, and the power of one state above all others. And that has been the mode for the last, you know, 30 years or so, up until the recent years. And I think it's finally run into a brick wall in Ukraine. And we'll see what happens after that. And hopefully we get out of this mess without the whole world blowing itself up. But if it does, I think we are entering into a new era where these people can bang on the drum and threaten and try to choke off funds for other countries all they want, which is what they have been doing. Why every country in Eastern Europe is told, and you know, the patriarch in Moscow said this a year or so ago, that the one demand that's always given to all these countries, you have to have a pride parade. You must have a pride parade in your capital, whether you happen to want one or not. Well, I don't think that's going to wash anymore. And I think that's why when we are going to see new international institutions, not just the ones controlled by the Western powers or the World Bank or the IMF and so forth, where you can get loans, you can get credits, you can get economic development without all these social strings attached, that respects a country's sovereignty, national culture, religion, moral values, and so forth.
Yeah, you definitely have a point there, because in her own tweet, she made it a point to say that she was meeting with people of what she called civil society. So basically, you know, anyone that doesn't fit into this framework is kind of implied, I guess, to be just uncivilized. So Jim, for all Samantha Power's talk of human rights or what democracy should look like, at least under her advisement or leadership, her version of spreading democracy, will there be a giant missing element of sovereignty of whichever country she visits. I mean, she doesn't seem to speak much on that or on respecting the cultural values that vary country to country.
You know, I think it's important again to note it's not just Samantha Power, that she's one prominent figure in a very large operation, a very large nomenclatura, if I could put it that way, very similar to the one that ran the Soviet Union with a kindred ideology, but different on some of the details. Oh, yeah, of course, this is totally incompatible with national sovereignty. You know, one of the slogans or the memes of this ideology is diversity inclusion, that we're all supposed to be in favor of diversity. But you notice that diversity means that people can be of different ethnicities, different races, different religions, different sexes, and God only knows how many sexual identities, but they all have to think exactly the same way. In other words, it's kind of a diversity of the descriptors of the various people, but not a diversity of thought. And I think what will emerge in a multipolar world is a true diversity, where you respect the fact that Germany is not the same as America, is not the same as England, not the same as Russia, not the same as India, not the same as China or Iran, that these countries have their own history, tradition, and cultures, and that state sovereignty, the sovereignty of states in a Westphalian sense, exists for the purpose of defending those values, that people in Hungary say, no, you know, hier stand ich, ich kann nichts anders. This is my place. This is my home. These are my people, my values. And over in there in another country, they have a different identity, different values. Good for them. We respect them, but we don't share them. And that's what I think is essential to a true diversity in the world between nations and cultures and states.
Yes, like the Silicon Valley Bank failure. We got to leave it right there. Former U.S. diplomat Jim Jatras, thank you so much for your insight today. All right, that is going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.